Hi, welcome back to Story Hodge, a podcast that celebrates the personal stories of friends and family as I travel around North America on a pilgrimage of connection. I am a humanitarian aid worker by profession, recently returned to the U.S. after 2 years of managing refugee and IDP camps in Iraq. Instead of spending my break at home on the couch, in April, I hopped in my car and started driving. I've been on the road ever since, reconnecting with friends and family I've met throughout the course of my life. If this is your first time listening, I'm your host, Jennifer. Earlier this week, I reached the sunny state of Florida. I lived in Merritt Island, Florida from September 1999 to August 2001, attending Bible school at a place called Teen Missions. This week, I had the chance to revisit the school, the place where I met my former husband and some of my best friends. I even had the chance to stop at the beach and attempt a little bit of surfing. Today, I'm recording from Lehigh in Southwest Florida, where I'm staying with two of my friends whom I met at the Bible school. In fact, they are both in my wedding. While my own marriage didn't last longer than a year, Amanda and Mike fell in love and got hitched just a year later. Today, Amanda will be sharing her story with me. What you might find surprising is that Amanda and Mike have 7 sons. So today we're going to talk about what that looks like and how these two decided to go big.
You guys are doing a good job.
Yeah, you're doing good. Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for being on Story Hodge.
Hi.
Okay, so as I mentioned, we met in Bible school and you were in my wedding. And both of us were in our friend Jessica's wedding, which took place just 2 weeks before mine. The funny thing is that you had made our dresses for both of those weddings. In Jessica's wedding, my dress was 6 inches too short. So in all the pics, the other bridesmaids, their dresses go down to the floor and mine stops right above the ankles.
Yes, I learned that you should never try to make someone a dress when they're not there. I'm so sorry that that happened.
It's pretty funny, though. I think it's like a favorite memory of mine that I'm wearing the white sandals in all those pictures. Well, thankfully, both you and Jessica looked pretty good at my weddings. I'm pretty happy about that, although I don't think I have any pictures to prove it. They probably got tossed out after my divorce. Anyway, even though things didn't work out for me, the day of my wedding was pretty significant for you. That's the day that Mike confessed his love for you.
Yeah, it was. And it was a surprise. We had a really great friendship coming out of me going through a lot of healing when my boyfriend had died the year before in a car accident. And so as we got to know each other, Mike and I, we just started leading worship together, actually. And so through that relationship, we became best friends. And we didn't realize the feelings that we had for each other until that night. He gave me a letter, and he told me not to read it until I left. So I read it. I think I was even driving, but I read it, and I was just blown away by it. And so as I was driving, actually, because I had finished the Bible school.
Yeah.
I was driving to a different school in Tennessee. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it started. And we just started emailing and things. So that's pretty much how it started.
And the rest is history. No, you guys got married about a year later. Was it September also? September of 2002?
Yep. September 14th, 2002.
You were 22. Mike was 21. He's the baby. You robbed the cradle on that one.
Yes. My boys call me a cougar.
Your boys know the word cougar?
I don't know how they learned it, but they do.
We're basically going to be telling the story today of everything after that.
Yes.
After the wedding night. I do have to point out, because it's relevant to the story, that the two of you were virgins when you got married.
Yes.
Had you talked about the size of your family before you got married?
We did, and jokingly he said that he wanted enough kids for a soccer team. You know, who knows if we really expected, but that's what he joked. And he actually said that he wanted a daughter first, actually.
I mean, you come from a small family. You just have one brother.
Yeah.
And then Mike, is he also from a small family? Or
he has 2 sisters.
So not too large. Neither of you just came from a big family.
Right. Yeah.
But you were up for the soccer team.
Well, we wanted to wait 5 years.
Okay, so the original plan was to wait 5 years.
Yep.
And you were, at the time, you had thought about different methods of birth control.
Right.
And you were going to go with 2. you were going to use the natural family planning. So sort of tracking your fertility.
Right. Tracking your cycles and knowing, you know, just paying attention to your body and things like that. And so it was pretty easy for me to figure out.
So you had started before the wedding.
Yeah, I started tracking and I was able to see actually taking temperature and everything, making sure that I knew the ups and downs. And so.
And then you also, for extra measure, on your honeymoon, you chose to use condoms.
Yes, we did. We did for a couple of weeks until we were beyond the point of being able to get pregnant.
So because you knew your fertility,
yes,
there was a certain window when you knew you would need to use them.
Right, exactly. So we did.
So you did, but surprise, surprise.
Yes.
You got pregnant right away.
I did, just a couple weeks into our marriage. And we found out when I noticed that my temperature wasn't rising like it should. And so
as you were tracking it.
Yes, as I was tracking it, 1 day, 2 day, 3 days goes by, and I noticed that it just wasn't right. So I went and I got a test, and I made Mike look, I think, at it first, and because I didn't want to know if it was a yes. We were pretty unhappy because we had plans of working with Teen Missions and hopefully being overseas, and so that was our goal. And we just knew that we eventually wanted to have kids, and that it would be a lot harder to do anything with missions, so that's why we wanted to wait. So I think he even actually had to leave the house for a little while, and I just needed
to go
a little
think
bit
about
time
it
to, yeah, we needed our own space to come to terms with it. So
So yeah. The first reaction wasn't, yay,
right.
It was, whoa.
Yeah, this changes everything.
It changes everything.
In our minds it did, yeah.
And then really early on, it's like you didn't really have even a lot of time to think about it, because with your pregnancies, you get very, very sick.
Right. So we were on our honeymoon, basically. We ended up being in Ohio for 3 months for me to be able to spend time with his family and for us to just take it a little bit slow. He had a part-time job, but nothing too intense to try to get to know each other and stuff. So also part of it was like raising support, things like that. And so,
because you were going to be missionaries.
Right, because we were going to be going back in January to Teen Missions. So I was cleaning the bathroom one day and using bleach, and I guess I used too much, and it just really just took me out all of a sudden. So I didn't eat for a couple days, and then it was just horrible. I couldn't keep anything down, and he ended up taking me to the hospital after 2 days of throwing up, like every 15-30 minutes. Like it wasn't stopping.
It wasn't the normal first trimester sickness.
Right. I couldn't keep anything down.
It was something much more extreme.
Yeah. So he took me to the hospital and they gave me medicine, and then he came home and it still wasn't working. So I ended up spending a week in the hospital in Ohio, and, you know, I didn't know anyone except Mike, and his family was still just getting to know me. So it really threw a wrench into all of the plans, getting to know everyone, because I was not me.
Right.
And what they were seeing was not my personality, it was the sickness that just took over everything. So
because you're not a weak person, you're
yeah.
a very strong person, and you're always doing things for others and always helping, and so to be taken out like that, I think, was probably super hard right at the beginning.
Right, we both really struggled emotionally and any way possible, because I just laid in bed for 3 months. So,
and at the time, did they give you a diagnosis then?
The second time when I was in there for a week, they finally did give me one, and it's called hyperemesis gravidarum, and it's short for HG.
HG, so. Hyperemesis gravidarum.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. So it's basically just more than normal morning sickness. You lose more than 10% of your body weight, I think, is the technical thing. Yeah, it's, you have to go on medication, and often, like, some women now will even have IV lines at home and stuff like that. So that is probably what I've needed, but they didn't know enough about it then for me to be put on all that stuff. So I could have functioned a little bit better instead of being hospitalized for weeks at a time.
Well, I remember I came to visit you shortly before your first son, Josiah, was born, because it was right after my divorce, and you and Jessica were both in Florida, since that's where we had been in Bible school, and I had been living in New Hampshire. And after the divorce, because in New Hampshire, it was only where my husband's family was, and so right. I didn't have any of my own friends either.
Yeah.
And I had come just for like a weekend of healing to be with the two of you. And I remember us sitting on the couch late at night. I think it was really only two or three nights that I had there.
Yeah.
And you stroking my head with your very pregnant belly, because Josiah was due to come a few weeks later, or maybe a month or two.
He was another 5 weeks.
5 weeks out.
Yeah.
But you were very skinny, I remember, at the time. It was just all belly, and the rest of you was skinnier than you had been when I knew you.
Right. I lost 30 pounds.
You lost 30 pounds when other women are gaining 60.
Yeah.
So Josiah ended up coming maybe because we had added a little extra stress. It's not quite sure.
Yeah. Well, just the lack of sleep can throw you into a cycle where you just can't stop throwing up. And because I was closer to the end, the more I would throw up, it would put me into contractions, so labor was starting. So it actually happened 2 weekends in a row, but it's not, they were able to stop labor, but they noticed that the fluid was low and the placenta had aged much. It was like 41 weeks age appearance whenever it was only 35 week gestation. So because of how hard it all had to work to try to feed Josiah, basically, and he had stopped growing for 2 weeks. And so they went ahead and just decided that the placenta could stop at any time. And so
it was safer. Yeah.
Yeah. So even though it threw me into cycles, it still helped discover this other problem that might not have been discovered otherwise.
Okay. And so you had a C-section with Josiah?
Yeah, because it was early and it was my first. If I had been more educated and may have asked to have a trial of labor to see if I could do it, because it basically was treated like an emergency anyway. They just kind of whisked me in there, but I don't know, it was so fast and I didn't have a lot of support and a lot of knowledge, especially because of the sickness. The sickness threw everything off, because originally I would have loved to deliver at home even, like if I were able to have more support, I think. So,
because we're talking today just in general about growing your family and the process and what that looks like, after Josiah was born, did you plan your next pregnancy?
We did. Even though the pregnancies were very difficult, it was almost like childbirth. You forget it as soon as it's over, right? Because you have this amazing baby. And I snapped back into myself really quickly. And so whenever he was about a year, we both kind of just were like, oh, I think we would like to have another one. So we just, you know, try to see what happened. And then we became pregnant again. And they always say that with HG, sometimes you won't have it again, you know, so there's always a chance. So we just prayed and believed that God would heal me and that I wouldn't be sick anymore. And so at about 6 weeks or so, it hit again. And I had been working, but I was no longer able to work and take care of Josiah at home. So it was really, really difficult. My brother actually came and stayed with us to help take care of me. And as the pregnancy got farther along, I think it was about 10 weeks, I started bleeding. And there was just, because the placenta was working so hard, there was just all this excess blood, like right beside the baby. So the baby was fine, but there was just this mass of blood. And then eventually, like I had said before, with you're just vomiting and vomiting and vomiting, it put me into labor again at 14 weeks. We went to the hospital to get fluid, basically. But because I had been so late at night, they went ahead and just put me in a room. Didn't have me monitored or anything, but I just remember, like, it was horrible. It was horrible, horrible pain. And when I would tell them, they were like, honey, there's nothing we can give you. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be fine. You just have to wait till the morning and we'll talk to the doctor. And I remember a nurse coming in at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was coming like contractions, but I didn't know. I didn't realize. Aww. And so when she saw, she was like, how long have you been doing this? And I was like, all night since the first time I called you. And so that's when they realized that something was wrong. And so basically the next day after that, after they got everything stopped, the baby was fine in the morning, but because he said, because of the medication that they had to give me, that that's probably what killed the baby, even though I was already dilating from having labor, from vomiting. So the next day he was delivered. He was about 5 inches long and a little boy at 14 weeks. So we named him Judah. And then
Judah means praise. Right.
Yeah.
Gosh, I know that's even probably such a hard story to tell now. You loved him.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I held him in my hand and he was beautiful. He looked just like Josiah. And I was so surprised. I really was. And when I tell people his age and what he looked like, it's people don't understand that they can look like this tiny little person and at such a young age. It was amazing and it changed me definitely in my mothering and all that.
So. Yeah. Because he's still a part of your family.
Right. Yeah. We talk about him a lot. So yeah. It's good.
So then after that, you spent a year sort of recovering.
It wasn't a year. It was just maybe 3 months.
Okay.
And because I always snap back so quickly, we thought we would try again. And so then Isaiah came along, and of course I was sick by like
again,
6 weeks, even though we hoped. And so at that point, people understood a little bit more that I needed more care. And while being on staff at Teen Missions, we weren't able, there was really no way to work that out. So we actually were advised to leave. And so we ended up with my parents for the rest of Isaiah's pregnancy so that I could have care and so that Mike could also care for Josiah. So by the end, I was a lot better that time. I still lost 30 pounds, but I was able to start eating and to recognize the cycles and what I could do to stop them a little bit better.
Like what foods would help? Crackers?
No.
No, no crackers.
No. Yeah, that's what they always say, but no, crackers are not so proteins.
Okay.
Are actually what it is. So, but that's a hard thing to think of eating when you feel horrible.
Okay.
So Mike was able to work a little bit and then Isaiah was born.
But essentially you had to leave your position as missionaries with Teen Missions.
Right. Yeah, that was hard. That was hard as far as, you know, just what we believe, what we should be doing. So
then you're now out of Teen Missions, and this actually turned into one of the hardest times in your life. It led to a little bit of postpartum depression, whereas after the other ones, you had always felt really great.
Yeah. Physically, I felt okay, but because I had so much support. Mike was there almost 24/7. My parents were also there and I had two babies. When we moved back to Merritt Island to work with a church and Mike also had a second job, he was gone all the time and I also had everything doubled. So a lot of people don't feel like it's a big deal, 1 to 2, but it was like everything doubled and my help like dropped off. So it was hard to figure it all out. So there was quite a while where I really struggled and it was undiagnosed, but I'm sure that it's postpartum depression.
Did you have a difficult time getting out of bed? What did that look like for you?
I couldn't. I mean, I...
You had to get out of bed because you had two babies.
Right. So for me, postpartum depression looked like anger, resentment, feeling alone. Like I was just alone and no one appreciated what I was doing. But we worked through it and as I was able to try to explain these feelings and Mike was able to try to help me figure out how we could work better with two and the two jobs. So when Isaiah was about a year and a half, we were just kind of thinking that we were missing someone in our life. And so we were wanting to have another baby and maybe this time try for the girls. So I looked up all the different things you could do. And we tried them all, and...
Like what? Like,
oh gosh,
upside down, or... I think I've read upside down.
Timing, definitely, because supposedly, if you are further out, like, if you have sex further before ovulation, then
okay.
The female, like, the...
So it's all about timing, it's not about position.
Not, well, there's a couple things about position, but I can't remember exactly anymore. It's been so long. But also, like, what you eat.
Okay.
Alkaline, acidic, that kind of stuff. So, but none of it worked.
None of it worked. None of it worked. And you got Ezekiel.
We got Ezekiel. So, during that pregnancy, God began to work things in my life to show me things that I had to sort through so that I was healed from HG. Because with that pregnancy, I lost only 15 pounds compared to the other three, where I lost 30 in each one. So, and I had a lot of support. We had people coming in to help when I needed it, but there was actually a change at a certain time. Around 12 weeks, it began to get a little better, and I was able to do more stuff. So that was also before Ezekiel was conceived. We tried for like 7 months about, and so I was also starting to learn about trusting God with your fertility as far as like the quiverful movement. And I began meeting with people, meeting families who, that's the belief that they followed. They just trusted God and never tried to control it at all.
Okay, so you've mentioned the quiverful movement, and there might be a lot of people who've never heard of the quiverful movement. Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
It comes from Psalm 127:5. I'm probably going to quote it wrong now because I don't have it in front of me, but basically, blessed is the man whose quiver is full of children. So,
And that's from the psalm, the psalmist David. Is it David or Solomon? Who, do you know who said that?
I don't remember who wrote it, actually. So, but,
and a quiver is, what is a quiver? It's what you put your arrows in?
Right, it's what you put your arrows in. So, like, your children would be the arrows that you're keeping in your quiver. So, whenever it's time for, like, a battle or whatever, that you would have these arrows to go out and
accomplish great things.
Yes.
I guess. Okay.
So yeah, that's, so some people believe that they should trust the Lord completely with their fertility and not do anything to stop it.
Right. So no rhythm method.
Right.
It is just have fun in your marriage, I mean, and
right,
just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And that's also because you were thinking at that you trusted God with your finances, you trusted God with providing jobs for you,
right,
and everything else. So
yeah,
if you could trust God with all those other things, why not trust Him with the size of your family?
Right. It just kind of flowed. It was pretty simple thought process for us. It was a little scary, but yeah, that's basically what we came to the conclusion of, that we were going to trust God. Because it took so long to get Ezekiel and the other three were so quick, we figured, well, God does have a plan. And
right, like you got pregnant while you're using a condom anyway.
Right, yeah, that He's going to do what He's going to do. So just let Him.
Right.
Basically. So
at that time, you did identify as a quiverful family.
We did.
And you would use that label.
Yeah, I think so. And the next three came pretty quickly. So when Ezekiel was about 9 months or 10 months, I got pregnant with Malachi. And then same thing with Malachi. When he was about 9 or 10 months, I got pregnant with Simeon. And then Simeon was born, number 5.
Number 5 in 7 years.
Yes. And that, we love babies, but that was really intense.
Well, definitely a handful.
Yes. And people say that all the time. So after Simeon was born, I just really felt, I guess, overloaded. And our marriage went through a bit of a rocky place. So I was recognizing the legalism that I had begun to go in, not with just having babies, but like in my dress or whatever. Just things,
yeah,
like that.
I think around that time you started wearing long skirts all of,
yeah,
the time.
Yeah.
Were you wearing a head covering?
No, I wasn't. But I just started to be able to recognize it. And this was stuff that I was putting on myself. Mike wasn't putting any of this on me. And but as I just began to recognize it, I was able to begin to release it, because mm-hmm, I was seeing that I was under this weight that I literally couldn't carry anymore. I felt like,
right,
I just couldn't do it anymore. I wasn't managing the house well. Homeschooling was crazy. There was always piles of laundry and dishes and babies crying all the time. So I also took that time to redo everything in my house. I did major reorganization and got rid of a bunch of stuff.
So basically what happened was is you and Mike together had to reevaluate and
right.
and discuss again, was it working?
Right.
You know, trusting God for all the babies to come whenever they were going to come.
Right.
And whether or not that was sustainable, could you say it that way?
Yeah. Yeah. Was I managing them well? Was I caring for them well? And if I wasn't caring for them well, then should I keep bringing more? So I felt like, you know, I wasn't being a good steward of these right. children that God was giving me. So
you guys decided to start using the natural family planning again.
Right. I also, like, in the Quiverful movement, there's some people who will say that, you know, even go against doctor's advice, but we quickly came to the conclusion that we were not that. So when I had the fifth C-section, there was just a lot of risk, a lot of things involved in having five C-sections and surgeries.
There was risk to your life.
Right. And we decided that I wanted to be the one to raise them, and I didn't right. want to, you know, possibly not be the one to raise them.
Right.
So that kind of helped us
make the like final God decision. Used,
yeah, God used the doctor. And we always actually said that. We always said, as soon as the doctor says you shouldn't have any more, that we would
listen.
The doctor didn't say we shouldn't have any more, but he said you should absolutely wait 2 years before you have another C-section. So we felt peace, and we knew that we were being led by God and what he would have us do in that. So we made the decision to go back to natural family planning, and I really enjoyed the break to try to not be pregnant for a while and enjoy myself, try to have fun again instead of it being so crazy.
And it is fun here. Like, I've been here a few days, 4 days, and you would think it's crazy. I think you warned me a lot of times that
yes,
it was going to be crazy, but I love it. And seems pretty normal. It's just almost like having three. I'm being honest, I don't really see a lot of extra chaos because I think you've done such a great job and everybody knows their chores and talks pretty nicely to each other, except for, you know, regular roughhousing.
Right. I think they're normal. It's just that they're seven. That's all.
Okay. So had you guys thought at that point about trying for another girl?
Well, I think that we knew that we were going to have a lot, so you expect that a girl would come eventually, and we didn't feel like we should try any of those things anymore to try to get a girl. But yeah, I think actually with like the odd numbers, 3, 5, and 7, it was actually pretty difficult to be like, it's not a girl again, it's another boy. I struggled with that more than Mike. I think he maybe he struggled with it because of me. So,
and it must have been a little bit hard because even just like I asked you right now about it, I think probably a lot of people when you would get pregnant again would say, "Are you hoping for a girl?"
Yeah,
and that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
and uncomfortable.
Right, you don't really know what to say, and you know people would be like, "Oh." Like count the boys and be like, oh, so you didn't get your girl. And even Josiah like started asking me. I remember one day after we came home from the store, he's like, Mom, why do people think that boys aren't as good as girls? And I'm like, that's not what they're saying. They're just saying that in the odds of our family size, there should be a girl, like trying to explain it away like that. But to him, it was like they weren't really good enough. So yeah. But they're all happy. Every time we get another boy, they just cheer. I think a couple of them were sad a couple times, but they get over it pretty quickly.
Well, at least you do have enough for a basketball team and a couple of subs, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've digressed. I think where we left the story is you had 5.
Right.
And now you have 7.
Yeah.
So how did you decide to go again then for number 6?
So we just started to, like I said, we were enjoying things. I was getting things more organized. So I wasn't feeling overwhelmed anymore. And then when Simeon was about a year old, we both started to feel like someone was missing again. It's always that feeling. So we stopped. We decided about a year to stop controlling anything, to stop, trying to plan anything. Yeah, it's always so weird. And even now I feel like someone's already missing. So then Abram came, and Mike really wanted to get back in ministry. So we were actually considering that Abram could have been the last one, but it spent about 9 months trying to resettle here in Fort Myers area, Lehigh. And so after we got settled, everything, you know, has just been going well, and God has been blessing. And so then we started to feel that feeling again. And Mike knew before I did this time. I was like, you know, people try and try for months, and he's like, no, already. And so yeah. it's just kind of funny. So then we were expecting Gideon here in Fort Myers.
But this last pregnancy for you was very difficult.
Right. I was actually a little bit sicker than I was the previous one. And because the boys were so helpful with everything, they could actually run the house while, like, I spent one day with a migraine and one day throwing up all day, and they ran the house. But about halfway through, because I had had so many C-sections, they started sending me to a specialist to measure the scar, and they couldn't see it. It was undetermined. It was so thin they couldn't measure it. So what they concluded was that the scar was on top of my bladder, and that possibly was the only thing holding everything together. So it was actually pretty creepy to hear that and to see it, because we saw it on the ultrasound. So they knew before that they were going to have to do a bit more invasive surgery. So different, they weren't going to use the same scars on the inside. That would mean that any further pregnancies would be much greater risk.
And so at that point, you guys decided that that would be the last one?
We did. And it was a really, really difficult decision. Not because we felt like we were disobeying God. We both felt peace. But it was still hard because we just do love babies. And, like, the air is, like, electric when you
it's
bring home
a new baby.
It's not
just that
you
love babies, but you love your whole family. You love children and
yes, we
people
do.
In your family.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was weird to be like, this is it. Yeah. And if we're not for him to be a boy was another really difficult thing to come to terms with, actually. We actually had a family gender
meeting?
Reveal.
Okay.
So we had our friend make cake truffles, and the inside would be the color of them, a boy or a girl, pink or blue. So whenever everyone came.
But you already knew? You and Mike knew?
We did, because I found out once or twice with the boys, and it was hard for me to not have processed that it was another boy. So Mike met me at the ultrasound, and we saw that it was another boy. So I actually had a weekend at the women's beach retreat by myself to sort through it. It was perfect timing that God set it all up. But I think that the family, because we planned it this way, regardless of what it was, I think the family was really expecting it to be a girl, because it was a little bit special than it had ever been before as far as a reveal, you know? So actually, whenever we bit into it, my niece burst out bawling, and I just went over and I sat with her, and I cried too, and I was like, it's okay. I know that we really hoped for a little girl, but God's plan is always better than our plan, even though we don't understand it right now, and we just cried together. I felt like it was time to just embrace that loss in a way.
Yeah.
Not that I would take a single boy away.
Right.
But the idea of not just dressing a little girl up in pretty things, not just having Barbies thrown around the house, but to me, even deeper was the thought of having a daughter, someone who would grow and you would teach them things and they would learn from you and they would be your friend. So that was what I had to come to terms with.
But Gideon is your son with so much promise.
Yes.
He was in the hospital after he was born.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we didn't expect anything to be wrong with him because he was like 37 weeks and 9 days, or not 9 days, 5 days. So it was 2 days shorter than the majority of the boys. And Josiah was born 35 weeks and he was in the hospital for 2 days. So we really, really didn't expect anything to go wrong. And whenever he was born, he was just not breathing the right way. And so he ended up being in the NICU for 10 days. And I stayed there at the hospital all day long, staying at our pastor's house every night, and his wife. So it was really, like, I was really, that was something I really had to deal with even more than I expected at all.
But so. Something I loved is that you told me his room number. His room number was 2911.
Right. Well, that was when he had, at 5 weeks, he had RSV. So he came home and then he went back to the hospital.
For somebody who doesn't know what RSV is.
Oh gosh, I don't know the name of it, but it's basically a cold.
Okay.
So for you and I, it would be a cold, but for a 5-week-old baby, the mucus sits in your lungs and it just like suffocates you. So he got RSV, and yes, the night he got really, really bad, his room number where he had to be intubated and they saved his life was 2911. And
that is for us, you and I know that's associated with a scripture from the Old Testament in the Bible, from the book of Jeremiah.
Right.
Jeremiah 29:11, it says, "I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you or to give you a future and a hope."
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. I, you know, I'm not totally one to like claim signs or whatever, but when I saw it, I was like, that was the Lord.
I mean, as soon as you say 29:11 to me, I mean, that's kind of obvious.
Yeah. So he made a full recovery, and he had a little bit of trouble afterwards, but he's doing perfect now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's running around the house, and like, he's already big, 20 months, right?
Yeah,
he's almost 2, and yes. So cute.
He's our baby, and he's rotten, and I try not to spoil him, but the boys do, so.
So I just have a couple of questions. You know, this is such a long story, not long, but it's so interesting and so much to it. And I think we could spend hours hearing more of your process. But I'm just wondering, do you still identify as part of the Quiverful movement?
I don't really like that name or label anymore because of what it can go with. So there's a huge range from what a Quiverful family would truly believe and follow. So some are very extreme where, you know, they wouldn't control anything. And then there are others who...
And in those families, it also tends to be really much more legalistic in all areas, not just the size of the family.
Yeah.
But the relationships and how the family relates to each other.
Right. Roles within the family.
Especially gender.
Right.
But on the other end of the spectrum,
there are people who just love their babies, genuinely love their babies and care for them well and just love to have babies. So, and children, have them grow up. And not all Quiverful people are homeschoolers. They don't all wear dresses. They don't all have long hair. Some women work and some men stay home. Like, there's such a huge range. But I would not say that. I wouldn't use that word to ever describe us, to introduce someone. I would say that we do have God's heart for children. And even now, if God brought more children into our life, we would welcome them. But basically the scripture in Psalm 127, you know, children are a blessing. And we believe that, and we live it to the best of our ability that God gives us. So
I love that. Okay, so another question that I have is, how do people react when they see you all together, when you're at the grocery store or at the park? I hate to ask, but I'm sure they say something.
Yeah. I actually stopped going grocery shopping with the boys by myself when we had 4. Because it
at
was
4?
Yeah. So it's not very many. But I was like, I just didn't want the stairs. Like, already with only 4, people start to talk about, you know, oh, your hands are full. And they just kind of stare. But now the response that we get when we go do things Mike does all my grocery shopping for me now. It's amazing. I love it. I don't like it. But now people, you know, stare or even will count out loud within a foot from you, you know, and everyone hears. And that's really frustrating. And you really have to be gracious, and it's really hard. So we just smile, and you know, people say, "Oh, God bless you," you know, and we're like, "Well, he has, thanks." You know,
just so they try mean to keep it sort of a little bit negative, or with it comes across with a tone,
right? Yeah, totally, totally. So, and especially about them being all boys or whatever. So
how would you like them to react to you if you could tell people, you know what, this isn't probably the right thing to say? How would you like them to do it differently?
Well, I know that we're different, but you don't want people to stare and point and count when they can hear you. But like, I'm totally fine with smiles. Like, there's been some older ladies who will just, their face will just light up, and they will be like, "Oh, wow, you are blessed." And so, yeah, just, if you don't have anything nice to say, maybe just don't say anything at all
about
it. Stick with
the age-old adage. That's the rule we should all know.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you have questions, I'm totally fine with answering. And most women like me, we love to talk about our kids. So we would be happy to answer those questions. So, you know, just like talking about us when we're standing with an earshot is really, really rude for any person.
Right.
So.
Well, I am so thankful that you came on the podcast and you shared your story, because I feel like I've sort of been a part of it for the whole, you know, but we've been away. I've been living a life, a single life, nomadic life, and it's actually quite the opposite. And yet I think we still have such a lovely relationship that's going to keep going.
Yeah.
And for the listeners who have listened to previous podcasts with my friend Jessica, it's the three of us. We all went to Bible school and are great friends. And I'm waiting until we're old ladies. I have this instruction that I cannot write the book before we're old, but I want us to write our three different stories in one book, where you get to tell the story of your lovely, beautiful, large family, and Jessica in the middle with her three and the community lifestyle that she lives in her church, and then me with no children, single, and living the life that God has given to me as a humanitarian. And I think that that's a great story, because especially we as women, we think we have to look like something very specific,
right?
And we have to fit some mold, and we don't. We each have our own thing, and it's unique and beautiful. And so I can't wait until we get to write that book.
I can't either. It's going to be amazing.
Well, thanks again, Amanda.
You're welcome. Thank you.
For those listening out there, again, this is Story Hodge. You can find me on iTunes or on Google Play Music. I will soon have a website coming out, Story Hodge, that's HAJJ.com. It's not quite ready yet, but you could probably get a sneak peek if you really wanted to. So thanks for listening. Until next time.
You have one cookie.
This is your one.
Can I pull your tooth out?
No!
Mom, here,
no!
You're not going to get a cookie if I can't take a tooth.